Hello, friends. Today's episode is another presented in two parts. The first, the original recording made a few months ago, and the second, a follow-up after all the recent world events. Enjoy. Welcome to the Memories of a Moonbird podcast, exploring life one story at a time. Hello, friends. Today on the show, you know her from the legendary John Hughes movie 16 Candles, where she played Marlene, the sexy American girlfriend of Long Duk Dong. Over her career, she's appeared on TV shows like Criminal Minds, American Horror Story, The OA, Desperate Housewives, and ER, just to name a few. She's also had a successful career in finance, traveled throughout the world, and is a proud mom. These days, when not acting, her love of travel has led her to host a beautiful, exclusive Airbnb where she's had the unique opportunity to meet people from different cultures and countries all around the world. She's brilliant, successful, driven, and an inspiration to other women. Please welcome Debbie Pollack.
That was the sweetest introduction. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get started, I wanted to say that you have the distinct privilege of saying one of the greatest lines in 80s movies history. I want to thank you for loaning me the donger.
Ah, yeah.
He's really bitching. So how was it? How was it working on 16 Candles?
Oh, it was amazing. It was the first film I did. I actually got the job because I was doing a show in Upper Montclair, New Jersey, a musical called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Yeah.
And I was in very, very tight costumes with a big red wig. And I talked in a voice like this the whole show. And at intermission, I got a business card from someone that said Universal Studios on it. And I thought it was a joke.
Wow.
And it was from a lady named Jackie Birch. And it said on the back in her handwriting, I'm casting a movie. I'd like to meet you. Will you call my office tomorrow?
That's fantastic.
And so, I was stunned.
Did you have to actually audition after that, or was it?
I did. I actually auditioned, and I auditioned with Getty, the wonderful gentleman who plays Long Duk Dong, and I are, we met on the movie. We've been friends forever and ever. But we were outside, and it was my first movie audition. I was a little nervous, and he said to me, "Let's just play." And we got in the room and we ended up jumping on the couches and climbing on the tables. And at one point I picked him up. it was a lot of fun. Total improv.
Now, I know that was actually John Hughes's first, it was his directorial debut, that movie. Did you know at the time working on this movie, did you have a sense of, hey, I think this is going to be a huge hit?
No, I don't think any of us had that sense. It was, there were three distinct groups of people on the set, the teenagers, people who were 20 playing teenagers, in their 20s playing teenagers, and then the parents and grandparents. And everybody was just having fun. But we had no idea that it would be what it is today.
Was there any particular moment on set that you loved that was funnier than anything else, or a particular memory that stands out?
Well, so many of our scenes were deleted.
I didn't know that.
Oh, John Hughes shot 16, 17, 18, and 19 candles. I mean, there was so much film that he shot. And he was a really wonderful director to say, just go play. You know, the scene in the house with the big party?
The bicycle thing and the weight going through the floor and everything.
That bicycle thing was not in the script. Getty and I were waiting to shoot a scene and that got cut out of the movie, but that was written into the scene. It was Getty, me, and the housekeeper, who was a Hispanic maid of the house. We were all three in bed smoking pot. I mean, it was really hilarious, but got cut out. But Getty went exploring in the house and he comes down and he goes, John, there's an exercise room upstairs. And John said, what is it? John Hughes went up with Getty. They looked on it and he goes, can you ride that bike? And Getty said, sure. And Getty told me to get on it. And then Getty got on me. And that's kind of how it happened.
Is the part where the weights go through the floor and then go to the wine cellar and break everything, was that actually
an afterthought?
Oh,
it honestly was an afterthought. After I lifted the weights and John said, make him fall off. And so it really wasn't in the script.
Now, I take it the weight part was done in a studio later where they didn't actually destroy someone's house all the way through the...
They did not. I remember lifting the barbell and having the weights fall off into a pillow on the floor.
So how heavy was the barbell?
You know, I don't remember, but I don't think it was that heavy.
That's hilarious. Well, so let's go back a little bit. Where are you from originally?
I was born in Phoenix. When I was 9, my father decided he wanted to go back to graduate school. So he went to school to be an endodontist in Loma Linda, California. Hmm. And then 2 years after that, we moved to San Diego. So when people say, where did you grow up?
All over
I say
California.
San Diego, because that's really where my formative years were.
It's a beautiful area of California, San Diego. Did you guys travel when you were a kid?
Oh my God, all the time. And one of the favorite things that my parents used to like to do was go on cruises, because there's activities for kids that are separate from the adults.
When did you discover, at what age, that you liked to travel?
Well, my parents were really interested in giving us experiences. Hmm. So I remember the first time my mother took me to New York and the first Broadway show I saw. I remember the first time we traveled to the Grand Canyon, the first time we went to Mexico and saw the ruins. It was something I learned from my parents that I gave to my children about wanting to show them other parts of the world. Hmm. So I gotta say, I was probably 9 or 10 when I really started getting really excited about going somewhere with my family.
Where was the first place you took your kids?
Well, the first place I took my kids was Hawaii. And I think my daughter was 4 and my son was about 6.
Now, do they have the travel bug as well?
Oh my God, yes. Especially my son, who just last year did Thailand by himself. My daughter and her new husband just got back from Bali for their honeymoon, but they both have traveled extensively. I think the best part about having kids who have this adventure to travel is I've done amazing trips with my children.
That's incredible. I mean, I talked in a different podcast actually about when I moved out to California for the first time. I drove from Boston to Cleveland, picked up my dad, and then he and I drove across the United States together, and we had this incredible father-son trip. And those experiences, I just wish everybody could have those kind of trips with their parents. It's invaluable.
I think the more adventurous you are, the more adventurous your children will be. For example, one of the trips that we took, probably when my daughter was 6 and my son was 8, is we did a whitewater rafting on the Green River.
Awesome.
And it was one of those trips where you had a really small plane and you flew into the top of this mesa, and then you had to hike down to the river. And then we were it was a family trip, so they really adapted when they stopped at the different little stops on the river. They'd throw out sand toys, and they'd throw out a slip and slide, and then they'd serve wine to the parents. But it was an amazing trip because the kids were whitewater rafting at that age. And when they put the boys in a kayak, and the boys would be in a kayak on whitewater rapids. It was fabulous.
Well, I love what you said about the more adventurous you are, the more adventurous your kids are, because I feel like not only that, but I do firmly believe that people who travel, and I always say, it doesn't mean you have to go have 25 stamps in your passport. It just means you leave the comfort of your hometown and you go, even if it's an hour away, to see a show or something. But people who actually travel and step outside their comfort zone just a little bit, I just think it makes you a better human being.
Right.
You know, I think it's such an important thing for people to do. What is the actual most rewarding thing for you about travel?
Meeting different people, from seeing different cultures, of course, tasting different food.
We'll get to food a little bit later.
Okay. I don't want my world to be Los Angeles. I want my world to be the world, and I want to learn about other people and have experiences that other people have. It's one of the things that I really get from my Airbnb, people bringing all their experiences and their cultures to my backyard.
That's phenomenal. And I can't wait to talk to you about that. Let's go back to your careers, I should say, for just a minute, because you're not just an actor, but you've had a successful career in finance and other things. How much have you actually traveled for your various professions over the years?
Well, when I was a stage singer, dancer, actor, I traveled the country working in different regional theaters, which was really interesting. I remember standing at a Dairy Queen in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, the day that Elvis Presley died, and having everybody behind the counter sobbing, listening to the radio because Elvis had died. I remember being in another place where a small town in Indiana where I was doing Hello, Dolly. And I was shopping late at night, and I was in the freezer section and there was a pass through. And on the other side of the freezer section, there was a little boy standing there singing, "Hello, Dolly. Well, hello." It was like he was singing to me because he recognized me in this small community. He'd seen the show.
That's cool.
So that's kind of cool.
Well, and art is just such a magnificent way to reach people, you know. Over the years, what do you think has been one of the harder parts of traveling for you?
There have been times when I've said, oh, I can't do that by myself. And when I actually have gone places by myself, I've always been just so happy that I did.
Where's somewhere you've gone by yourself that was a standout experience?
Oh, one of my favorite vacations ever. I went to Montana to the Miles City Bucking Horse Sale.
Mm.
It is a huge rodeo and horse sale in Montana that people from all over the country go to buy bucking horses for their shows or their rodeos. And then during the evenings, they close down the streets of this little historic town, and they have bands and the bars are open. And I went by myself. And I remember sitting in the hotel restaurant for breakfast. And I was there with my cowboy boots and my cowboy hat. And there were four couples that were there, husband and wives, and they all saw me sitting alone and they invited me to sit with them.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I have made these friends to this day I'm still in touch with, but they're like, a single woman, come on, we're going to show you the ropes. That part was fabulous. But then also you buy seats in the grandstand, and my seat happened to be in the midst of this huge Navajo family. And they go every year because they have their kids ride the bucking horses, and they shared their food and they shared their wine. And it was so great to just have this experience.
Did you buy a horse?
I did not buy a horse.
Okay.
I did not buy a horse, but I bet on the horses because when they're not doing the sale of the horses, they're having horse races.
Oh, cool. Did your horse win?
No, my horse didn't win. There's something else that they did. They have this amazing thing called mutton busting. Mutton busting is where little kids, and I'm talking 3-4-year-old kids, get on body armor and a helmet. They tie a rope around a sheep, and they'll just like bronco busting, but this is sheep busting, mutton busting.
Mutton busting.
Hilarious. And they win, and sometimes they cry when they don't. And it was so great because you saw all the families involved in this. It was
lots
of fun.
I can only imagine if this sport came to Los Angeles, mutton busting LA. I'm just giving someone out there an idea, just throwing that out there.
It was great. It was great.
Well, you mentioned food earlier, and I'm a big foodie. So what's one of your favorite foods?
Oh my God, I'm half Italian, so I love Italian food.
Mm, agreed.
I love Ethiopian food. I love Indian food. I love a really good taco.
If you were going to recommend a place in the world anywhere that you think everybody should see at some point in their life, if they're able to, where would you send them?
That's a great question. Do I have to have been there?
I guess not. Why not?
I think Rome is amazing. I think Rome has...
No, wait, have you been to Rome?
Yes.
Okay.
Several times.
Okay.
I think Rome is extraordinary because it's so interesting as you're walking down a street, and then you just get to the end of the street, and if you just look to your right, there's the Pantheon, you know, or you go and you see how well preserved the Colosseum is. And I do think that's really interesting. I think people should see the Grand Canyon. Mm. I think people should see Washington, D.C. I think people should see Dubrovnik.
Really? Now why?
It's an enclosed fortress city right where the cruise ships drop you off. And Croatia has a real mix of beautiful, beautiful national forests. Mm. And then there are parts of the country that are still completely demolished from the wars that were there.
Historically it's
very interesting, very rich. But Dubrovnik is just beautiful. It really is.
So actually, we almost went to Croatia last year, and then we ended up in Scotland London and Paris instead. But it's on the list, so I'm glad you recommended it because now it's an even bigger reason to go.
It's amazing. It really is.
When you're traveling, something I love to ask people about is how do you get acquainted with a new place you've never been before? So with me and Jolene, she loves to go for a run. I like to find a bookstore, museum, a place that makes scones if they have one. But for you, what is it that helps you find the heart of a new place?
I like to talk to people who have been there before, Americans, people I know. But I also like to talk if I just go into a coffee shop or go into a bar and ask people, we just got here. If your family was here for the first time, what would you tell them to do? Where would you take them? What would you take them to see?
That's awesome. Another question I'd love to ask people since you brought up being in a bar. You're sitting down somewhere and you get to have a conversation with anybody in history that you want. It doesn't matter who it is. I don't actually need to know who you're talking to, but what are you drinking?
Oh, whiskey.
What kind?
Well, I don't remember the name of them, but when my sister and I were traveling in Ireland, our thing was to go in and order a flight and to just, you'd get three or four different little glasses of these different whiskeys and to read the description and how they're made and where they come from. And it was just fun because I didn't expect whiskey to taste that much differently.
Is there somewhere that you haven't been yet that you really want to go?
I really want to see the Northern Lights.
Any particular place you want to do that from?
Well, I'm thinking Iceland sounds kind of interesting.
It's the hot spot of tourism right now.
I know it is. That's one of the reasons I'm thinking there's got to be another place to see it. My sister and I were just again going, oh, we got a couple of weeks here. We were looking at a cruise of the fjords. I'd like to see more of America. I haven't been to Washington, D.C. I haven't been to...
I used to live in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you did? I lived
in Annapolis, but yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been to the South, really. Yeah, I'd like to see Charleston. I'd like to see New Orleans.
Oh, New Orleans. You want to talk about food?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And then you and I talked before about, I want to see Paris. I want to see Tel Aviv. I want to see, I'd like to see Moscow. I'd like to see Cuba.
Well, you better get traveling. You got a lot of places to go.
I know.
Have you ever had to overcome any particular challenge while traveling that afterwards you were really proud of? Like, hey, yeah, I did that.
Not really.
Okay. That's fine.
Not that I can think of.
I'll skip that question. I have a pretty extensive list of travel tips on my website that things I've just collected over 30 years of traveling. Is there something that you feel in your experience, oh yeah, if I was going to sit down with someone who had never traveled before, this is a piece of advice I would give them?
Oh God, I'd tell them to pack, unpack and take out half of it and then pack again. Just don't, I always overpack. So I'm really conscious now to not bring too much.
Let's talk about your Airbnb. So you have this magnificently beautiful Airbnb and you have people from all over the world come to stay with you. So tell me a little bit about it. What's it like?
Well, right now there's a very famous newscaster from the Ukraine and we had a very interesting political discussion yesterday when they arrived.
Mm.
I have had people from all over the world and it's very interesting because I have learned so much about the world without leaving my backyard.
That's cool. Where's the furthest away someone's come from?
I've had people from Russia, from New Zealand, China, India. I'm very, other side of the world kind of far away.
Basically, you spin the globe and throw a pin and someone's probably come here from there.
I've had people from Belgium and from Spain and Italy and France and Denmark and all the different little countries,
yeah.
Like the East, Belarus, Russia, the Ukraine, Israel. Oh God, I have to tell you, one of my favorite evenings was oftentimes I'll sit in the backyard and I will have, bring out a bottle of wine or a bottle of champagne. And there happened to be two honeymooning couples and one was from Israel and one was from United Arab Emirates.
Wow.
And I brought out a bottle of champagne. We started talking. They all spoke English, which was great. And they started talking about their wedding receptions, who got crazy, who got drunk, who did other things that were very naughty. And it was like this, here are two completely opposite cultures. And yet their wedding stories were exactly the same.
That's hilarious. People want to ask stories about Airbnb. We actually had an Airbnb briefly for a little bit of time, for about 6 months. And the furthest away we had someone stay was Kazakhstan, actually. And we are still friends with them to this day. This couple, they just got married. I actually love not only how Airbnb unites people, but we ourselves use it almost exclusively when we travel. It's a fantastic resource. But have you ever faced a particular challenge with a guest and had some experience that you had to deal with that you want to talk about?
It's very funny. I was just talking to somebody today about this. There were two very lovely German police officers who were married to each other that were staying at my Airbnb.
This sounds like the start of a joke. Two German police officers who are married to each other walk into a bar.
Well, he got very angry at her one night, and they had been out drinking, and he slammed the door and stormed out. He just forgot to let go of the screen door when he left, so he actually pulled the screen door right off the house. And then about 2 weeks ago, I found a drug dealer. There was a drug guy dealing drugs out of my house.
Well, that definitely takes the cake. I am curious, how do you stay environmentally conscious with the Airbnb and as a world traveler?
I've actually thought about this quite a bit. As a host, when I first started, you get the little Keurig coffee maker and you have the little pods. And I thought, when I saw how many pods were going in the garbage, I thought, this is ridiculous. So I actually have found coffee pods that are biodegradable, that don't have any plastic at all on them. They're made of corn, and then the little bottom part is made of a biodegradable mesh. Mm. I also refill everything. I don't use any one single use of anything. I also give them a water filter, so I'm not giving them plastic bottles of water. It's something I've thought about a lot. I think the hardest thing about being a host in terms of the environment is the amount of laundry that we have to do. But I do use soap that's very low impact kind of detergent.
That's great. And what about when you're traveling abroad? Like, I tell people, and my listeners on the podcast have probably heard this 20 times by now, but I have a smaller Yeti mug and I take it with me empty through security. And I know it's just a small thing, you know, but I'm trying to, in my corner of the world, every chance I get, do something and even learn new things on a weekly basis to better practices, I guess you'd call it, for being environmentally conscious. But as travelers, I feel like we have a responsibility to do our best to try and push environmentally conscious travel forward.
I think something that I really appreciate is that the cruise lines have definitely made a real effort to try to recycle. I think I have always been really aware of water use. So many times I would do really quick showers, which I do at home too, just because in terms of saving water. I do the exact same thing you do with the water bottles, with the Yetis, not the water bottles.
Very cool. I'm going to ask you a question about research. I always tell people it's really important not only to research before they travel to their destination, but also if you happen to be someone who loves to read and you have a book that takes place somewhere extraordinary, I think it's awesome to read the book and then go travel to that place and experience it as the author did when they wrote the story. Has there been anything?
No.
Okay. Fine, Debbie.
I'm sorry. But you were going to go philosophical. Ask me about a place that I went for spiritual reasons or a place.
Hey, Debbie, has there been a place that you've gone for spiritual reasons?
That wasn't clean.
No. We'll just keep rolling. Go ahead. Has there been a place that you've gone for spiritual reasons, Debbie?
You know, there was a place in my life where I was going through a lot of transitions. I really didn't know what I wanted to do next. And I knew I needed to just get away and figure some stuff out. So I bought a plane ticket to Seattle and I got on a ferry. Mm. And I went to an island called Whidbey Island. It's this beautiful, very undeveloped little island up in the Puget Sound. And there's a place there called, if I remember right, it's called the Captain's Inn, I think. And you sit out on the porch and you look out over the sound. And I remember very clearly just sitting on that porch and taking deep breaths and just taking in this beautiful scenery. And there was something about just getting away and being alone to think that gave me such clarity and such peace, mm-hmm. that I've wanted to go back and I've never really had the opportunity. And then I really thought, that's a kind of place I don't know I could ever go back to recreate that, because it was so special at that time in my life.
Yeah, you can't go back to the place that existed when you were there. You can just go back to the geography.
Exactly.
That was one of the most painful lessons I ever had to learn. And I actually wrote a post about it on the site called The Reflections of Yesterday, about when I went back home, my dad was dying, and I revisited all these places from my childhood, but it was so different than when I'd been there. You know, I'd been gone for 20 years, you know, and it was a very odd sensation to see the high school 2.5 times the size it was, this town that was a very small Ohio town, now a burgeoning mini metropolis, you know, is crazy. It brings up how wonderful travel is, because I think people sometimes think, oh, I'm just going to go on vacation. I want to go see Paris. I want to go to New York. I want to go to Toronto, whatever. But travel is so much more than that. And I love that you brought that up, because it's how wonderful to have a solitary experience just for the sake of getting away and breathing the air. That's incredible.
There's something else that I like to do. And my sister is a rabbi, and my family was religious, but I'm not as religious as, say, my parents or my sister. But there is still something that I find fascinating about going into a community and seeking out their Jewish heritage in that community, finding the synagogue, finding the Jewish neighborhood. And I've just always been really drawn to that. Mm-hmm. On the flip side of that, one of my favorite things to do when I'm in Italy is go into the churches, go into the grand cathedrals, because they are so spiritual and there's such beautiful artwork and sculpture. And I've had very spiritually moving experiences standing in a cathedral in Italy. So I enjoy doing both of those things, because to me, the heart of people is their spirituality. So whether it's a cathedral or a synagogue, I love seeking out those buildings when I travel, because to me, that's the heart of the community that I'm in.
That's great. It's beautiful. I love to ask everyone I interview, what's your whoopee? It's a reference to the Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom movie from the 80s. It's the security blanket, the thing that you don't ever want to travel without, that you always take with you. Do you have something like that?
Yeah, it's so silly because it's a blanket. It is a little blanket that I actually, because I was a dancer for many years, I've got a lot of arthritis in my neck. So sometimes you're going somewhere and you're sleeping on unfamiliar pillows. So to me, I actually travel with a whoopee, because I can roll it up, I can ball it up. I actually, on the plane, I wrap it around myself if I'm cold. It's like this multi-use kind of tool for my traveling.
That's awesome. I'm going to dig a little bit deeper here about another aspect of travel. One of the things that frustrates me, actually, is that I hear people say all the time, like, oh, someday maybe I'll travel, you know, and I don't understand why people are so afraid to just leave their comfort zone and go out there. So a twofold question. One, why do you think that is? And what advice would you give to people? And secondly, you are a very strong, independent woman who's kind of done it all. You've had careers, you have kids, you've traveled all over. What would you say to other women out there as advice? So advice to the general population about traveling, and advice specifically to women.
I would say advice to the general population, because I saw this in my parents. My parents loved to travel. As they got older, it became more and more difficult for them to physically travel. So one of the last family vacations that we actually took, we went on a cruise with my parents, just my two sisters and my parents, all the grandkids and son-in-laws, everyone stayed home. And we actually had to see how they had to deal as handicapped people on a boat. So to the general public, I would say, don't make a list, make a dream list of where you'd like to go, whether it's up to, you know, the mountains where you live or across the world, and don't wait, go do it while you still can. It's like these experiences will be a once in a lifetime. And as people are worried about money, the money will always come back. The fact is that these are experiences you're going to have once in your lifetime, and that there's always a way to make more money. So I would encourage people to go. As far as encouraging women, what I would say to women is go, travel. There are amazing tours for women. You can go with girlfriends. I've traveled, I think I said, with my sister and with girlfriends. You know, have a girls' weekend somewhere, or just go and find your mile city. Find your place where you love something and go to where that something is. I went because of the rodeo, and I went because of cowboy boots and a cowboy hat and the music. And I went and I found that place, and I went by myself, and I was incredibly happy I did.
That is truly, truly fantastic. The last thing we do here in the podcast, as you know, is 299 philosophical and life questions with Moonbird, where I ask you to pick two numbers from my awesome list of philosophical and life questions. What are your two choices?
179 and 213.
Oh, let me scroll. Hold on. 179. If you were offered the opportunity to go into space, would you?
Ooh, I think I have to say yes. Because, again, it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime things.
Talk about frequent flyer miles.
Hello.
And finally, Debbie, question 213. You ready?
I'm ready.
Drum roll. Could you live without the internet?
Oh, boy. I'm going to say yes, because I did for so many years. I remember what it's like to have to read, to look to find for something, or have to go to the library to look something up.
I remember what it's like to have to get up to change the channel.
There you go. Yeah. Remember a black and white television? You do?
Yes, I do. Well, not that the TV itself was black and white, but some of the stations we watched as a kid were in black and white. So I remember when the programming would end at the end of the night, and you'd have that poltergeist, you know, screen.
Yes, on the TV, yes.
And they'd play the national anthem, and then it would go away.
You know, in a way, I almost wish that we had moments when we could turn it off, because I think things are so immediate now that we lose a sense of interpersonal connection because of the internet, because everything's so rapid and so it just kind of invades everything. I think there's a whole generation of people that would rather text than talk. And I think it would be nice to try. I know people would probably go nuts. But yeah, I could live without it.
That's beautiful. I actually have a similar feeling, only in that one of the main reasons I started the podcast and built the website and all this stuff is to encourage people to just get out there and talk to each other, you know? And I really, really hope that that more people do, that we can have, even if it's a tiny sphere, but a sphere of influence to tell people, hey, it's okay. It's okay to just talk to another human being. I'm not going to guarantee every conversation is going to go great, but most of them will.
This one has gone great. And I'm really, it's been fun just to sit and talk to you and think about things and think about my travels. And I just have been sitting here with a smile on my face, because I do have so many amazing travel memories.
And that brings us to the end of our original episode. As I mentioned, Debbie was kind enough to join me on a Zoom chat for a follow-up. Debbie, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks again for joining me. How has COVID affected your life?
Well, professionally, the entertainment industry has shut down. So we've all had a nice little vacation from that. And on the flip side of my personal professional life, Airbnb business has completely shut down. No one is traveling throughout the country or the world right now. So I've had about 18, 19 cancellations. And quite honestly, I'm happy to give them a full refund, because I keep thinking, if it was me and I was going to invest in a vacation, I would be grateful to get the money back so I could do it another time.
That's very nice of you. That's very nice of you. How do you feel about getting back to life and the soft opening of things? And
interestingly enough, my daughter and I went to a restaurant today for the first time. And I will be honest, I was hesitant. I was concerned. And I will say that the places that are opening are doing an amazing job to keep people safe. There were very few people in the restaurant. They actually turned a good sized portion of their parking lot into an outdoor patio with umbrellas. We did sit on the inside. There were plexiglass sheets in between the tables, and people were being very respectful, keeping their masks on when they weren't eating. And I think the biggest downfall to all of this is that they are using a great deal of styrofoam and plastics and single-use plastics because they're not refilling people's coffee cups or anything of that nature. You just get a new styrofoam cup. And that was the biggest thing that I was not happy to see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the environmental cost of all of this in the end.
Our air quality got a great bump up from nobody going to work, but we are definitely going to see an increase in single plastic use and styrofoam use.
Are you looking forward to traveling again?
Someday. I don't know when that will be. I don't have any trips planned. I really don't have any interest in going anywhere right now. I really have enjoyed being at home during the quarantine. I've learned a great deal.
What are some of the things you've done at home?
Oh, of course, like what everybody's done, cleaning closets and reorganizing furniture. But what I got to do was spend a great deal of time with my adult son who just graduated from medical school. I feel incredibly fortunate because I know parents just don't get that kind of quality time with their adult children. And I was in heaven just watching shows on Netflix and cooking for him. And we had some really serious talks. And right before he did move away, he got engaged. So,
mazel tov.
Thank you. It was a lovely, wonderful time and really, really good memories for me for quarantine.
Well, hey, Debbie, I'm going to bring things around to current events, talk about the killing of George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and everything. Obviously, you are a white woman in the world. How has this whole thing affected you and your life? And has it changed how you see the world and the future?
The first thing that comes to mind is, yes, I'm a white woman, but I'm a mother. And that's my first identity. Not even white woman. Mother is my first identity. And I think about all of the young men and Mr. Floyd. They're somebody's sons. And it is incredibly difficult for me to even try to process how these families are impacted by losing their loved ones. My children have half siblings that are Black. I someday may have Black grandchildren. And I think about family. That's the thing that comes to mind first is the systematic racism in this country is as old as this country. And there so much needs to change that won't change overnight. But what I am happy to see is the numbers of young people that are coming out to the protests who are saying, this is not how I want to live my life. This is not how I want my country.
Yeah. And enough's enough.
And enough of this is enough. And I think it's going to take, I don't know what it's going to take to make it change, but I am praying that with all of these young voters and all of these young voices, that we will begin to see a change in this country. And I want to see it in my lifetime. I want to see that happen.
Jolene and I had this very candid conversation, and she looked at me and she said, the question you should ask on the podcast and the question that you should ask yourself is, knowing how Black people are treated in the country today, would you trade places with any of them? My answer was no, and that's a hard thing to admit, to go, oh, wow, when I really think about it, no, why would I want that? And if that's the case, that is the most fucked up thing of all, because that's just a sign of all the white privilege, all the things that are wrong in the country, the lack of equal opportunity. And those are the things that I feel compelled as a white male in America to start using my voice through the podcast and other things to try and educate and bring awareness and hopefully bring about some positive change.
My parents, my father was raised on the side of Chicago. You did not look at a non-Jewish girl. And my mother was raised by a very devout, devout Catholic Italian family. And my parents were persecuted because they were different and they fell in love with people who were different than their families. So I am the first generation in my family tree that was ever raised without racism. And I don't see color. So when you said, would you trade places? I kind of thought, yes. Because to me, it's not about the color of my skin. It's about what's in my head, in my heart.
Well, the reason I said no is because as a white male in America, I basically don't have to think about anything and I can do anything.
Totally understand.
As a, if I were a black man in America, I'd have a whole different set of rules I'd have to live by.
Totally.
And a
totally
lot more fears. Understand.
Yeah, and totally agree with you. Yes, more restrictions, more fears.
But I think that's great that you have that situation. That's awesome, actually.
When I was in junior high school and high school, we lived in San Diego, and we lived very much near naval housing. And you got people from all over the world. So there were all colors and languages. And I was very happy that I was in such an integrated school. But I never saw anybody being persecuted because of a color or anything like that. The only thing I ever really remember was I did Godspell my junior year of high school, and somebody made a comment that was within earshot of my mother, and they said, "Why is she doing this show? She's Jewish." So yes, we are we are all persecuted for one thing or another, one way or another. But again, I think we are at a place where, and I say, thank God, white people are now going, this is bullshit.
I agree. So in going forward then, you're someone like me who's traveled extensively around the globe. What do you think is the best solution for the planet?
That's a hard one. You know, I will tell you something that I experienced during this quarantine, and it kind of goes into answering your question. What the quarantine did for me was it made me live very small. It made me aware of all of the stuff that we go and we do and we need and all this stuff that, you know what, we really don't need so much. And it made me get very much to the core of who I am and what I need. And I would sit in my backyard and I would just watch the bees. And knowing that the bees that were here, there are bees all over the world. There are people all over the world. That was a very weird marriage of bees and people. I don't know how I got there, but I guess what I'm talking about is getting back to simplicity, getting back to what is necessary for us to be good human beings, what is necessary for us to be tolerant and accepting of things and people who are not as we are. And I think, I don't know that it'll happen in this generation, maybe my grandchildren's generation. The simplicity is that we need to be good people, and we need to take care of each other, and we need to embrace our family, whether it's our genetic blood family or it's the family that we choose, our friends, mm-hmm. and just really get back to a place of identifying what's really important, which is peace.
Beautifully said. Debbie, I think that one of the gifts of age is wisdom and experience, and of course, perspective. And I'm wondering, how do you try to give perspective to people so that the younger generation see that things aren't necessarily, even though things are bad in the world and bad things happen, that the world itself is still beautiful? And we have a wonderful world, and things are better than they've ever been, and all this wonderful technology and medical advancements and stuff. How do you try to share that perspective with others?
The only way I can share my perspective is how I interact with people, with the people I love, the people I meet. The only way I can share perspective is showing by example how to be kind and how to listen and really hear somebody, that it's sometimes more than what they're saying in the words that they're saying. You have to look at it from the place where you are. You have to look at your world first. If you are happy in your world, then you can start seeing the bigger global world as a more loving place. But that starts in your heart. That starts in your own place.
I actually agree, but I would add that if you look at your own world and your own world is not a happy place, that doesn't give you permission to then go out there and make other people's worlds miserable, or to project this negativity onto everyone else and start saying all these terrible things, because most likely it's coming from a place that you're just not happy. But maybe a lot of other people around you are. And so I do try to not rain on other people's parades. I didn't used to be that way, and that's the truth. I used to kind of project all my negativity outward, and then, you know, again, age and wisdom, you know, your dad dies, all that kind of shit happens, and you,
yeah.
No wonder people say, don't be a dick, you know? but I've come to realize that's also a very important thing, is don't take your stuff out on other people.
Totally agree with you. And, you know, it's almost up to us as, like, good people to, and I'm not saying you're trying to fix somebody, but to be incredibly empathetic to people that only see that.
If you were going to give one piece of advice to the world and say, you know, if you want to do something positive for change in your life, what's just anything random positive that you would like to put out there for people? Just an idea, maybe.
Make dinner for somebody you don't know very well. Invite them over, open a bottle of wine, have a conversation, be open to the conversation and learn about each other's differences.
Some of my most cherished memories in my life are over meals or snacks or coffees with people. I agree. And even I would even add to your suggestion that if you don't want to cook dinner, meet someone for coffee and do the same thing. Have the conversation. Share a biscotti or a bagel or whatever, you know.
My son just moved to Chicago, as I mentioned. And I said to him, I said, what have you been doing? And he said, you know, I just met a neighbor. And I said, really? I said, what'd you guys do? He said, we had a beer. Chicago's completely shut down. He met a man. I think he said he was in his 80s. This black guy who's lived in the neighborhood forever and ever. And they sat on his front stoop. And my son, a white Jewish doctor, sat with this old black guy. And they had a bottle of beer. And Andy said it was like the best thing that he'd done in Chicago since he got there.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Well, Debbie, question, if you were elected president of the United States tomorrow, what are the first three things you would do?
I can't say this is necessarily in order, but I would get some serious gun control going. I would find the people who could communicate to the NRA and to the people who have lost children in schools all over this country. And I'd find a way to say, you know what, this has to stop. Gun control, definitely on top of the list. International relationships. Our current, I just can't say the word, but you know who I'm talking about, has destroyed so much of the legacy of the United States and has ruined so many relationships. And, you know, we depend on a global economy. We depend on each other in this world for the environment. And just repairing those relationships, I think, is incredibly important. And lastly, and this kind of comes under an umbrella of take care of each other, address the homeless issue, address hunger in this nation, address health insurance, take care of each other.
Debbie, for you, what does it mean to be spiritual?
Oh, spirituality is not religion in my mind. Spirituality is about being a human being and know that there is something greater than yourself out there, whether it is an entity or an energy or a person, Buddha, Moses, Jesus. It's about knowing that there is, and right now I would call it an energy of a greater sense of life and of purpose and of direction. So that we don't feel so alone, and so we don't feel so disconnected, and so we have an identity. And some people will find that identity through a church. Some people will find that identity through meditation. But I think it's absolutely something that's essential, because again, it gets to the feeling of, or the sense of, what makes us good people. People are going to have different identities with their spirituality, but I think it's something that everybody has somewhere on some level.
Do you believe there's something after we die?
Oh, yeah.
It's a fucking party.
I do. I do believe, you know, we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and I did not come up with that. That is something I have learned.
I've heard that before. I like it quite a bit.
When our physical body dies, that energy doesn't die. That energy not only stays with our children and our grandchildren and our friends, but that energy also goes to the universe. And some people believe that it will come back in another body, and some people just believe that, like, for example, every time I see a butterfly in my backyard, I say hello to my mother. Silly as it may sound, to me, that's my connection to my mother now that she's no longer on the earth. Mm. And to me, that's just having my sense of connection to her now that she's not here anymore.
If you could continue to live a healthy life, how long would you like to live?
I don't know. And I'll tell you why. Because in my head, I'm about 24.
Hey, that's the age I always say I am.
In my mind, I'm about 24. Now that my children are both older than I am, it's something very strange, but that's a whole nother story. So the physical body obviously is not 24. The physical body is definitely on the downside of the journey. But I don't feel anything more than 24. Even with all of the life experience that I've had, and I've had an amazing life, the excitement for life still feels 24.
So do you think you want to live until that excitement is gone?
I don't think it'll ever be gone.
I guess you got to live forever then, kid.
Oh, God, no thanks. You know, I watched both parents get old, get sick, and I would like not to have to necessarily go through a lot of what my parents had to go through. You know, if we all say we'd like to go to sleep and never wake up, which sounds just fine with me. But that being said, I do have grandchildren to look forward to. And I do have people that I want to see go through their journey.
A lot of chapters to a lot of books you want to read.
Absolutely.
I make this analogy that whenever you see someone in your life, let's say you run into an old friend, your brain takes a snapshot of that person. And then that's the last memory you have of them. And so, you know, I have a friend who I didn't see for 15 years and then not even on video. We just didn't see each other. She was on Facebook. And then all of a sudden we saw each other and her hair was all gray and she had wrinkles. And I just hadn't seen her in so long. And it threw me really hard because the old snapshot I had of her was from years ago. And so while I don't really like social media, honestly, the one thing I do love about it is that there's all these stories that you have in your life. You start a story with someone in high school. You start a story with people in college or whatever, at work, at a job. And then if you go away and you move and stuff, you don't know what happens to those books. And then now in life, there's all these people, all these chapters of different books that I kind of want to know how they ended. What happens to those people, you know? So that's one of the reasons I want to be around is I want to see all those stories. I agree with you.
Yeah. And it's also getting to this place in my life and thinking about all the amazing experiences I've had, and whether it's been traveling or working or loving or just doing silly things, I have had a wonderful life. And I feel incredibly fortunate for that.
Are you afraid of dying?
No, I've already told my children I will come and see them. So the other day, my daughter asked me, so what are you going to be, a butterfly? I said, I don't know. You'll have to figure it out.
Debbie, what do you think is the purpose of art?
Purpose of art, I think, is to teach. I think it's for us to teach us about ourselves, about the world, about beauty, about emotions. I think it's to teach.
What are you most passionate about in life now?
Food.
Yes.
Okay, that just came, you know, that was my inside voice screaming, but I go back to being a mom.
No, fuck that. Let's go back to food.
Okay.
Motherhood, schmotherhood.
But you know,
what's your favorite?
Well, wait, hold on. The thing that I have to say is the excitement that my daughter is married and my son is engaged and they are building their lives, and that to me is like the best show on television right now.
And it frees you up to focus more on food. So do you have any new food experiences lately that you want to talk about? Have you cooked anything new under quarantine that you're like, ooh, this was awesome?
You know, what's been really interesting, because I've been getting the farm boxes and going to the supermarket infrequently. So the new food experiences is opening the refrigerator, opening the cupboard and go, okay, what can I make? And it has been absolutely thrilling and enjoyable.
Don't you feel like every night is chopped in your own kitchen?
Yes.
And for people on the podcast who don't know, Chopped is a show on the Food Network where they give them a certain set of ingredients and they have to create something from those ingredients. It's a really fun
surprise,
show to watch.
A surprise bunch of ingredients.
Yeah. And stuff you would normally never put together.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But I agree. Same thing with us. We're like, I've got a yellow zucchini, an onion, two things of ravioli, and a bagel. What can I do here? Debbie, what's your spirit animal?
Dolphin.
Why so?
When I was a little girl, my family would go to Coronado Island every summer, and I would spend hours in the ocean on a raft pretending that I was a mermaid or somebody who could ride the dolphins. That little raft was my dolphin. And dolphins can speak, and dolphins can love, and they swim underwater, but they breathe air. And all of those things are how I feel about the inside of me, that I want to be a dolphin. to be able to swim like that and be free in the ocean, miles and miles of ocean.
See, so you just gave it away. Now when your daughter goes out in the ocean, she sees a dolphin after you're dead, she's going to be like, there's mom. You know?
Flipper.
You remember at the end of every podcast, I do the 299 questions with Moonbird. And last time you picked your two questions and we answered those. Just because you're here another time, I don't normally do this again, but I want you to just for fun, pick one more number from 1 to 299 and we will read you that question as the last thing we do today.
Oh boy. Let's see. How about 136?
136. Oh, ending on a somber note. 136. Why did you cry the last time you did so?
The last time I cried was the night before my son went to Chicago, and I knew it wasn't a somber cry. It was felt like a release, like I was releasing my child to the rest of his life. And it was a beautiful cry because I was happy for him. I was sad to see him leave, but I was so thrilled to see him achieve what he had worked for so long in medical school and so hard. And I was so proud of him that he has this wonderful woman in his life. And it was almost, sounds odd to say, but I felt proud of myself that he could do everything that he's doing.
You should be proud of yourself. Any good parent who's raised some good kids, I mean, that's a heck of a thing to do in the world.
And I knew I had to cry the night before he left, because if I cried at the airport, he'd be furious.
That's awesome. Well, Debbie, thank you so much for coming in again and just having a quick chat with me, and certainly wish you the best. I'm sending you a socially distanced hug through the microphone. And as always, please go out there and have a masked up great day.
Thanks, Daniel.
I'd like to thank my totally bitchin' guest, Debbie Pollock, for being here and being awesome. And remember, friends and listeners, not only should you be wearing your masks, but if you want more Moonbird in your life, and hey, who wouldn't? Head on over to memoriesofamoonbird.com or visit me on social media at memoriesofamoonbird. See you next time.